Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is Spencer Wild Stallions Williams.
Yeah, I like that one this time.
We got a great show in store as we just finished watching the recent release of the trilogy of the Bill and Ted movies, Bill and Ted Face the Music. This was a very unique film, and honestly wasn't too sure if we were going to be able to get a chance to see this one, because they were talking about putting it into the theaters, and I'm like, I'm not touching a theater right now. I'm good on that. I think Spencer agrees with me.
Oh, yeah, I was interested, like, because I was like, I'll find a drive-in that's playing it. I will see this movie.
I'll sneak into somebody's trunk and go over there and see it. But we had the chance to rent it in home in the safety of the germ-free bubble that we live in, and had
I bought mine, mister. I am not paying $20 for a rental.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's $5 difference, and you can just keep it.
That's the amount of a pumpkin spice latte. Cut it out.
And here we go.
So we're going to dive into that, but before we do, Spencer, give them an opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check out all of our 200-plus episodes over on our website at filmlosophers.com. We just literally did a full month of celebrating the life of Bruce Lee. So if you haven't heard those episodes, go back to our website, listen to those four episodes. Which movies did we pick? You're going to have to go and check it out, because they were some really good movies, or at least good conversations about the movies. I'm not going to give away too much, because you got to go and listen to them. But before you head out, before you head over, stick around, because we have to face the music and talk about Bill and Ted Face the Music. That's right. I threw in one of those.
And yes. I got that. Very clever.
This movie has been over 30 years, just about 30 years in the making. Ever since the first two films, with Bill and Ted's Excellent Journey and Bill and Ted's Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. We now have the third film in the trilogy to have come to the comforts of our home. And we got a chance to watch Bill and Ted Face the Music. This was a unique film. This was a very interesting situation. Number one, for the fact that we were watching it from our homes, which you would naturally feel like when movies drop, you go to the theaters. But it was kind of counterintuitive. So we got a chance to check it out. And needless to say, we have not discussed this beforehand. We haven't gotten each other's opinion. So I'm interested in hearing what Spence has to say, and I have a couple of questions to see if he can prove his geekiness here as we discuss this. So before I do, Spence...
Already, you're wrong to ask questions.
Why don't you just start with the official synopsis goodness, huh?
The stakes are higher than ever for the time-traveling exploits of William Bill S. Preston Esquire and Theodore Ted Logan. Yet to fulfill their rock and roll destiny, the now middle-aged best friends set out on a new adventure when a visitor from the future warns them that only their song can save life as we know it. Along the way, they will be helped by their daughters, a new batch of historical figures, and a few music legends, to seek the song that will set their world right and bring harmony in the universe.
That's right. Directed by Dean Parasot, Alex Winter, Keanu Reeves, and William Sadler reprise their roles as Bill, Ted, and the Grim Reaper, respectively, while Kristen Schaal, Samara Weaving, Bridget Lundy Payne, Anthony Carrigan, Aaron Hayes, Jaima Mays, Holland Taylor, Kid Cudi, and Jillian Bell join the cast. Actually, there is also a third person. The woman who plays Missy I forget her name offhand, but it's the same actress for all three films. So that's also
the man who plays Ted's father.
That's right, the chief, Chief Logan. So Amy Stock, and Hale Landon Jr. All those people, they play their same roles as well. Alex Winter actually confirmed this on his Twitter account way back in February 2nd of 2019, that Bill and Ted was officially happening, which was really crazy because at the time, nobody was aware as to whether or not this film was going to get made. There had been efforts into trying to make it since the early 2000s or the mid-2000s, I believe, and there was pushes to try to get it out there, but nobody would pick it up. So I guess it took a whole chance in the future to finally get picked up and made, and luckily it did. And in May 2020, Alex Winter launched a social media appeal to members of the public to submit a 30-second video clip of themselves rocking out to music, with some of the clips actually being selected and used in the finished film, which was really cool. You had a lot of different clips from actual regular people, and then some actual stars, like some notable people. I wouldn't want to call them stars. You had Guillermo from Jimmy Kimmel Live, and that's really the only one that stood out to me at the time. It's really interesting. One of the things to note that Samara Weaving, the girl who actually plays Bill's daughter, is actually, mm-hmm. she actually won the role of Thea in this movie after Keanu Reeves found out that she was the niece of one Hugo Weaving, which, if you've lived under a rock and don't know, Keanu and Hugo actually worked on the 1999 film The Matrix, which also turned out to be a trilogy. That's super cool. Did you know that, Spencer?
I did not.
See, the things you learn every day. You got to stick with me. in this film, Kelly, played by Kristen Schaal, is Rufus's daughter. The late George Carlin played Rufus in the first two Bill and Ted films, and his real-life daughter's name is Kelly. So the quote-unquote Kelly role is named as a way to recognize and honor George Carlin. Obviously, for those that don't know, George Carlin did pass away. However, before he did, he played an incredible character in those first two films. Iconic, very much a notable character in the Bill and Ted films. And it was unfortunate that he did pass, but I do feel like they did a good job honoring him in the recognition of him throughout this film. George Carlin, if you don't know, was a great comedian and a really fun actor. He did a lot of great different roles here and there. But this was one of the ones that I think got most noted for with his film career. And so the way they did go about honoring him, I think, was absolutely spectacular. So couple of pieces of information on the budget. The film did have a budget of $25 million. I can't really give you a box. Personally, I don't think it's fair to give a box office or a weekend box office number based on the fact that some people, their weekend doesn't really always start on a Saturday or Sunday or a Friday, because we all are in quarantine and the pandemic and nobody wants to die. So,
yeah, fair.
You get the opportunity to see it when you can throughout the week because it's at home. So I threw out the weekend box office numbers because I don't think it was fair. But Bill and Ted, these movies have been around since, I believe, 1989. That was when the first film was done. And these are films that honestly were a part of that transition from 80s aesthetic and 80s, that 80s feel and vibe, and moved into the early 90s kind of sense of humor and unique funness. And I think that throughout all of these films, I actually remember the times when I actually got a chance to see these movies. I saw them when I was actually really young. I don't know if you saw them way back when. When was the first time you saw the Bill and Ted movies?
I don't know. I was a kid, but it was on TV, like one of those like Saturday afternoon movies.
You watch a lot of movies on TV.
As a kid, yeah. What else am I going to do? It was the 90s. There was no internet.
Okay. mind you, it's true. It's true. And it is one of those types of movies that after it did make its debut, it did hit a lot of those like syndicated movie circuits, the ones that were on UPN or what was UPN after that? Was it WB?
WB then.
It was WB then. Yeah, right. Like watching movies on there late night, the local access channels where they would like play movies like that. I don't know if you ever had or have you ever watched a local access channel?
Sacramento has one, but it's not like one that's broadcasted or something. It didn't show up at my house. That's what I know.
Mm. sure, because you were the one broadcasting it. These were the type of movies that a lot of people, I keep finding more and more people haven't seen. Like, they've heard of them. They've heard of, like, the different plot points of the films, but they haven't actually seen these movies. And it's interesting, me talking to somebody who is, shall we say, of pigment paleness.
What?
White people.
Okay.
It's interesting talking to people who it seems like the movie's more geared for, and mm-hmm. me tell them, like, hey, have you ever seen Bill and Ted? And they're like, oh, no, I've never gotten a chance to see that movie. And I'm like, I saw it when I was a kid. Like, I was a little, like, if I didn't see the movie, like, on VHS, I'm more than certain that it was played, but with Spanish dubbing on, like, one of the Spanish stations, like, where they play those movies. Yeah. I'm 100% sure. Hola, Bill. ¿Cómo está usted? Oh, yeah, who's like, seriously, I'm more than certain that's probably else where I've seen it. So this is one of those movies that you feel like there has to be a lot more people out there that we, at least the people that we know, that have seen the first two films. Because I keep running into more and more people who haven't. I don't know.
Yeah, I've never bothered to ever ask anyone, actually, now I think about it. So I have no idea.
And that's one of those things that's like, you would feel like this movie, this particular film, is coming out to like a massive amount of fans, people who know of it, people who are wanting to see it, blah, blah, blah. And the more and more people I keep running into, they're like, oh, yeah, you know what? I was going to get around to watching them. I just never did. That one movie, the other one's coming out, right? The third one. And I'm like, seriously? Like, how could you not have seen Bill and Ted? Like, excellent. It's like the PG version of Wayne's World. Like, that's what I always considered Bill and Ted. Like, you have these two guys who are all about rock music. And just have a more PG adventure than Wayne and Garth. So, but maybe that's what Bill and Ted was essentially like created as, like a PG version of Wayne's World. I don't know. When did Wayne's World come out? Now I'm interested.
No, Bill and Ted existed as a comedy sketch before it was turned into a movie.
You mean Wayne's World?
No, I'm talking about Bill and Ted.
What do you mean it was a comedy sketch?
It was like this comedy sketch between these two. I think they ended up being writers on the first movie, but it was like a comedy sketch that they did as an improv thing. And that's kind of what led to Bill and Ted being created.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that, to be honest. That's really interesting. Because honestly, Wayne's World started as a comedy sketch that was on SNL.
Yeah, Bill and Ted wasn't on like a TV show. It was just a thing these two guys did.
Okay. Huh. Things you didn't even know. But going back to like talking about Bill and Ted, this particular one, Bill and Ted Face the Music, it's really interesting how we go from like a lot of the movies being very like selective and what's coming out and like to like something like this, which had a big expectation, like a lot of people online had a big expectation for it, and it's really interesting actually finally seeing it. I don't know, like I've been expecting, to be honest, to see this in the theaters, and I didn't get a chance to see it in the theaters. And I don't know if I feel bad about not seeing it in the theaters, you know? Not because the movie's bad or anything. I'm just saying, like, in general.
Yeah, no, I kind of do miss the theaters for, like, new movies.
Right.
Like, not like I have, like, the worst setup at my house. But, you know, there's always something, you know, very... you know, dramatic and cinematic about going somewhere. There's a big screen. There's really sticky floor. Like, that part's not great. But, like, the rest of the experience is pretty fun when people shut up.
True. And that that's one of those things where it's like, I think watching a movie like this in the theater is kind of one of those, like, it's one of those nostalgic feelings. Because I remember seeing, I don't know if I saw the second one. Had to have been the second one. I think I saw the second one, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, in theaters. I didn't see the...
I have a question.
Yeah.
Since you saw that one in theaters, as a kid, did that movie, like the sequence where they're in hell, did that scare you at all?
Oh, yeah, 100%. No, it didn't. I was like... man, this is a movie that I could watch, and I don't know if I wanted to watch it at that point. It did, but I think the idea of, like, seeing this movie and kind of just watching it the way it unfolded and the whole story of it, it was great. I really enjoyed it, and maybe as a kid I didn't understand a lot of the jokes or the unique points of the film. I just remember, you know, watching them and constantly doing, like, the pullback and the pretending they're playing the guitar and so forth. And but this was a movie where I had seen it when I was younger, and like you, yeah, I did see, like, the rehashes of it, both of them, on, like, syndicated TV. So coming to the point where we're at now, where it is almost... yeah, it's about, actually it is 30 years from the first time, from the first film. We're now at a point where we're recycling back to the start of what made the first films fun, or at least fun back then. And that's, like, part of those questions that you have to ask. Like, you look at, like, Keanu Reeves playing his atypical role, like, whoa. Like, dude, like, it's he was the bro before, like, what's his name, who's the guy from That 70s Show,
Kelso?
Yeah, well, Kelso, but his real name, Ashton Kutcher.
Ashton Kutcher,
like,
yeah.
he was bro before Ashton Kutcher came on the scene. And he kind of created that whole, like, almost blonde hair. I don't want to say bimbo, because it's not really a bimbo thing, but it's like the airhead kind of Californian mentality, or even persona. You know, watching Keanu Reeves in anything other than that role was kind of awkward. Like when he did Bram Stoker's Dracula, and he played Jonathan in that, and he's like, well, we shouldn't be where the vampire is. Like, it's like that didn't fit well. And mind you, yes, he was young, he was coming into his own, but it's Keanu Reeves. He honestly didn't start coming out of that and becoming something unique until the 2000s in terms of, like, branching out of that bro mentality. I think The Matrix had a really big impact on that.
Well, I mean, he did that before with Speed. I didn't feel like he was super bro-y in that one.
That's because he had a badge. And he was bald.
He wasn't bald.
Yeah, he was.
In Speed?
I thought he was bald.
Oh, well, he had a low haircut, but that's not what I would consider bald. Patrick Stewart is bald.
Yeah, but that's like close shave bald.
That's, yeah, close shaven, but not bald. You have hair.
He had a little bit of hair. He had peach fuzz.
That's still something.
But, like, even in that, I still felt he was still a little bro-y. Like, we can't go over 55 miles per hour.
Okay. Shut my partner.
I feel like you're adding a lot onto that right now.
Do I need to play a trailer for you? Like, myself, seriously. Like, that's him in just about everything up until the point of The Matrix. And even then in The Matrix, he was still like, whoa. Like, he never really broke out of that. Even in more serious roles. Honestly, I have to say, his most bro undoing moment had to have been John Wick. Let's just be honest. John Wick took the bro out of Keanu Reeves. He did. He's like, I mean, I'm pretty sure, I'm almost 100% sure if they could have, he would have done like the... be excellent to each other. And don't go over 55 miles per hour. Like, I'm sure he could have fit one in there. And I'm pretty sure, like, the directing team was like, come on, Keanu, you can put one in there. It's okay. No, I want you to take me as a serious actor, bro. Like, I feel like, and I'm doing these things with his hands because that's what he does.
Yeah, you are for some reason.
That's what he does in the Bill and Ted movies.
Podcast.
Hey, you know what? You're seeing it. But we get kind of a circle back to that point with this film, which, mind you, I'm not saying that as a detriment to the film. I'm not. I'm saying we're coming back full circle to where Keanu Reeves just about started. And we have to see all of that growth and change and maturing all tossed out the window and see Keanu, see if he, we're watching Keanu to see if he can be bro again after killing countless people, you know, with a pencil, you know, like in John Wick and everything. And it's really interesting because of the fact that the last how many movies? Let me see. The last so many movies have been so anti-bro from Keanu Reeves. Like, well, okay. Like take Toy Story 4, Duke Kaboom. Like, he played a Canadian, a toy Canadian daredevil. You know, and you get things like in John Wick, all the John Wick movies. You know, you get the Neon Demon. You get, I mean, there's a lot of these movies where he plays like 47 Ronin, Man of Tai Chi, all these opportunities where he's a much more finessed actor. Even a Scanner Darkly. Did you ever see a Scanner Darkly?
Yeah, back in the day. It was a long time ago.
Oh, man, that was such a good movie. That was, like, one of the best Philip K. Dick adaptations I had ever seen. Next to, obviously, Blade Runner. But that movie was an opportunity to see Keanu break out of that as well. even Constantine. Constantine was one of those movies that really didn't have the bro mentality because he was dying and he was killing demons. So you can't really throw a bro into there. But looking at his filmography, everything all the way back, you know, everything gradually began to change who he was into what we see now in terms of like a much more refined actor, a much more finessed actor, someone who is kind of put back like a lot of the things that he used to be known for to reshape who he is now, to reshape how he's seen now. And then we circle back to the movie that kind of established his bro mentality. and mind you, we're going to jump into this film and I don't want to give any spoilers away. So just know it's not a spoiler filled. This is going to be a spoiler free review. Maybe we'll do an extra credit episode where we do talk about some of the spoilers.
Yes, we will have to.
Huh?
I said we'll have to, yes.
Yeah, we will. We will. Don't worry. But just jumping right in, like, one of the things you have to appreciate is the fact that if you've seen the previous films, Alex Winter, the guy who plays Bill, and Keanu Reeves, obviously the guy who plays Ted, it seems like they are legitimately the people back from 1991, all grown up now. Like, it doesn't seem like, oh, it's Keanu Reeves trying, or it's Alex Winter trying to, like, force it. No, they seem as natural in that role as can be. And it's interesting to see that because, like I said, with all that stuff about Keanu Reeves, but also with Alex Winter, if you don't know who Alex Winter is, Alex Winter prior to this ended up going into directing, and he honestly started directing after his acting career, which is fine, mind you, but he didn't do a lot of big things. He didn't do a lot of, like, bigger pieces after that. A lot of what he did was move into the realm of filmmaking with, like, let's see if we can take a look at some of the stuff he's done. He did a lot of, like, Ben 10 movies. He did a lot of, he did Smosh the movie. He did some documentaries. He's done a couple of good documentaries. Level Up. He did a few episodes for Level Up. I mean, he kept himself busy, and one of the favorite roles that I like Alex Winter in goes way back to 1987, where he plays one of the vampires in David's vampire gang in The Lost Boys. So I've always loved him in The Lost Boys, as well as obviously in his role in Bill and Ted. But did you know that when they decided that they were going to do this film, Alex Winter, who had spent so much time already in the filmmaker, like in the director's chair, decided to go back to take acting lessons so that way he could go back into the role of his character in Bill and Ted. So I didn't know that up until recently, but yeah, the man...
I didn't know that either. That's cool.
Yeah, he wanted to go back into the role and fit it just right, which is crazy because it didn't look like he really needed it because he did really great as they both did as their younger counterparts grown up.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. And there's a lot of great things that get paid off in this movie as they are their characters. As Spence mentioned, there's obviously a situation where they have to create the song that will unite the world or the world will end and blah, blah, blah. And you see Bill and Ted with their, if you've seen all the films, going back to the original, you know Bill and Ted ended up getting girlfriends and got married to princesses from medieval times. And
not the restaurant from the actual time period.
From the actual time period, that's right. And so, and mind you, throughout that film, I mean, I think it's safe to say that at the beginning of the film, you realize there's tension between Bill and Ted and their wives because they spent their entire life trying to figure out this song. And I really have to applaud that opening scene where they're trying to, what was the name of that song? They were
that song had the most ridiculous title that I could never tell you what it is. I do know that it is actually a song on the official soundtrack.
It is.
So if you want to hear it in its entirety, it is there for you.
It's like, I want to say that the song is like a jab at like composers or musicians that like create ridiculous titles for their songs. And because it was like a part one. Of a part one or something? I don't know.
Yeah, it was a part one of... Oh, my gosh. I can't even read this because it goes off the page. I was going to read it, but I can't. I can read part of it. It says, "That which binds us through time, the chemical, physical, and biological nature of one, of love." And it continues on like that, but I don't know how to read it.
Are you serious?
I figured it out. "And biological nature of love, an exploration of the meaning of meaning, part one of three."
Yeah, and that's I really like how when the film intros everything and you get that first introduction to Bill and Ted, which, mind you, that first scene has a really great payoff to a gag that's been happening since the first film. The situation as to where they're at and why they're singing that song. it's so great. And it's like, it's oh, so my gosh. Insane. I was like, I wasn't even thinking about that. And I watched the film. And as soon as it opens up, I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is still happening. Okay.
Of course.
And they're like, we're going to debut our new song. It's going to unite the world. And they give that title that Spencer just gave. Mm-hmm. And it's like some throat music.
No, here's the thing, because this should tell you how dire the situation is for Bill and Ted. They thought it was a good idea to have bagpipes, throat singing, and a theremin into one song. Like, that is the most nonsense
all
I've ever
on a
heard.
Loop pedal, mind you. He's using a loop
pedal. Yeah, loop pedal. Oh my gosh.
It's so great, and that scene completely sets the stage for what you're about to experience. And mind you, the film as a whole, I'm just gonna say it, I had a really fun time with this movie. I had a really good time. I'm not gonna say I had a great time, but I had a good time with this movie. I was talking to someone who I, you know, right before I came on to record with Spencer, I was talking to them and they were like, so without any spoilers of your show or whatever, what did you think of the movie? And I said, you know, I had an unsuspectingly good time. Like, I didn't expect, unexpectedly good time. I didn't expect to have fun with this movie. Like, I honestly, here's the thing. I'm a big 80s fan. I love 80s movies. I do not like movies that pretend to be 80s movies. Like, unless you're giving homage to an 80s film, or unless you're doing something that's like a period piece, like, which in those cases you need to be spot on with everything. If you're just going to like make fun of the 80s, or if you're just going to like riff on the 80s, I'm not going to enjoy it. Like, let's just be honest, plain and simple. And at the height of the 80s, you had rock music coming into a whole new era, like going from hair metal to like straight, like this is when you were getting stuff like Metallica coming in, and you had stuff, you had so many different things. Nine Inch Nails was coming around. You had things, Alice Cooper. You had all these different elements of music coming in at the time in terms of rock, that shredding on guitars and much more driven sounds and beats, were coming about. Obviously Guns N' Roses, you know, you had, you just had a whole plethora of different things coming about. And so rock music became more than just tights and spandex and, you know, it became more than just hair metal. It became rock for this age. And so everything that was within me that was like, all right, I am hoping this movie doesn't just spend all that time making like dumb 80s jokes that are made for fan service. Like, if this movie is just constantly like, oh, well, I better get my windbreaker and like bust out a windbreaker or something, or like ridiculous things like that. Like, I didn't want to deal with it. So when this movie began, I was actually kind of hesitant in like really engaging. And then as soon as we got like within 15, 20 minutes, I realized this movie is not about, this isn't about embodying, you know, the 80s in joke form, but it's recognizing two people who are in this stage of life who are a product of the 80s, trying to make themselves productive in their endeavor to create the song that unites the world.
Right.
And you come to appreciate that. You're like, okay, yeah, this is legit. I can do this. I didn't feel like
do this.
No, I can't. Well, because to be honest, like
it makes it sound like, you know, you for a quick second there was like a dread that like this movie was going to be.
There was. Like, I'm not gonna lie. There really was, because of the fact that I didn't want to deal. Let's just be honest. I didn't want to deal with somebody creating a movie that makes fun of a movie that actually was a great part of my childhood. Like, those movies were fun. Yeah. I'm not saying they're a key part of my childhood, but I remember seeing those movies. I remember laughing at them. I remember seeing Death play the bass. Like, I remember all those scenes. I remember when they have to get one of their moms to drive them and Napoleon Bonaparte from the pool to get to where they need to go. And Napoleon had like the zinc oxide on his nose. Like, I remember those scenes and I remember laughing and chuckling to myself. And this is one of those elements where I was like, this is fun. This is unique. I can dig this. Because it didn't seem like it was just making fun of it all the time. You can tell that there was effort and joy put into this movie. Mm-hmm. And there were points of it that were meant to honor the film. And I didn't mind it at all. There were certain elements, like I have to admit, I actually really liked the choices for the actresses that they had that played the daughters. I felt like they were spot on. It didn't seem like it was forced. It seemed like, okay, that's kind of how they were raised by their dad. So yeah. It makes sense. Like, they're like, most excellent dad. And it's like, even some of the like phrasing, like, you've developed quite the musical acumen. Like, it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, spurts of like of the little pieces like that made the experience just a little bit more enriching, plain and simple.
The two that they have playing the daughters, I think they're really awesome, especially since they're not like, they're trying to do their own thing and then mix in just a little bit so you can like really feel like these are Bill and Ted's daughters.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I really appreciate, because they also like have like a little bit of their own flair, but not too much, because we don't really spend a whole hell of a lot of time with them throughout the movie. Which is
no.
A little sad.
It is, but it also creates like the expectation or the hopefully the payoff or the need for like them maybe in another film or something. Like, who knows? They could be the Billy and Thea, you know, next bogus journey or whatever. I don't know, like, because that was the names of the daughters. It was Billy is Bill's daughter and Thea is Ted's daughter, I believe.
Yes.
Right? I don't know.
No, Thea is Bill's daughter, yeah, and Billy is Ted's daughter.
Oh, okay. So Thea is Bill's daughter and Billy is Ted's daughter. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is really interesting. but this film really does have a good time with honoring its film from the past, but still recognizing elements of the current day, like liveliness of somebody who is of the age of Bill and Ted, like at the time, which, because it's interesting, they've got to be like in their 40s, 50s. I'm not going to age Keanu Reeves, because then I'll make myself sound old. But like, they are of that age, middle age, as we said in the synopsis earlier. And you have real world dilemmas happening in the midst of the like dimensionally wide issue, like universe wide issue, that is also on the macro of everything. Like, the fact that they have to have a song written, you know, by the end of the day, or all of reality will cease to exist as they know it. Like, okay. And the way they kind of like just like, oh, all right. Like, they recognize it as a regular threat that they're already used to. All the while, like, having the situations with their home and their life and dealing with all that as they are, you know, on their experience, their journey of figuring out this song. This movie does not spend an overt amount of time focused on the 80s nostalgic feel, because it does remember that this is a film about grown men who have grown responsibilities while being people like Bill and Ted. Like, I guess is the best way to put it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because this movie does not shy away from, like, okay, you know, how do the wives feel when Bill and Ted have spent the last 25 years trying to figure this thing out? Or how do, you know, how are the daughters coping with it? You know, what are the realizations that Bill and Ted have throughout this journey, and kind of recognizing like the importance of everything without losing sight of the overall fun feel of it. Like, as weird as this sounds, this movie made me, it made me feel okay when somebody died on screen. Like, I don't know if that makes any sense. Like, I felt like I didn't have to worry about seeing somebody's body be destroyed and like disembowelment or whatever. Like, if somebody died in this movie, they just vanished or they like disintegrated. And because there's a point in the movie where you realize, much like other 80s films, there's this element, this like Terminator-esque person who is in a role in this film, and he goes after people and he ends up shooting people. And when he shoots them with their laser, they don't, like, you don't see blood holes and everything. They just disintegrate. And for a long time, for a good portion of the movie, I'm like, man, where did he zap him to? And then it took me like a little second. I'm like, oh, they died. They're in hell. They died.
Yeah, I don't understand why he was zapping people straight to hell when we know for a fact there's a heaven in this universe. It's very upsetting. Also, it makes me realize that this movie has a very high body count for a Bill and Ted movie.
Yeah, for this being a Bill and Ted movie, this definitely had a high body count. it's true. And this movie really does... It really does pay homage to a lot of 80s films, but at the same time, it does its own thing. It has a very unique way to do it, to where it's not laying it on so thick. The idea of, you know, the Terminator-esque person going back in time, and then you find out he's got like some emotional issues, and it's like, okay, this is unique. I can roll with this. This is funny. And mind you, as much as we're praising this movie, there were a couple of like little flawed points in the film.
Little?
What were some of the ones that you found in the film without spoiling anything?
Yeah, that's really hard to do, Eddie, seeing as how a lot of my problems with the movie are about the end of the movie.
Oh my gosh.
It is. Because I can say this. I found the ending of the movie abrupt.
Okay.
Because in the sense of like, it felt like while they were making this movie, uh-huh, someone walked into the studio and it was like, you need to leave like right now. And they're like, and this is the end. Okay, bye. And like, that's how the ending of this movie felt to me. Like, yes, they hit all the points that they wanted to, but like, I don't know. I felt like it was kind of missing a so what at the end of it.
So you're upset because the film ended in a way that didn't feel like it should have ended.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a good understanding.
I know they got to like they had hit the points that they were trying to in the movie.
Uh-huh.
But it also felt like I was being cut off.
So you felt like you didn't get enough to make you happy, is what I'm understanding.
No, it's not. Like, I'm trying to get there, what you're but saying. Like, it's like you. It's like someone wrote an essay, but like there's no conclusion.
Okay.
Like, I got all the points, yeah, but like, where's your like wrapping it up part? Like, it's not. It's what's expected in a movie. At this point,
I can definitely see that. It's definitely the ending does have a sense of like, almost like a Disney-esque ending where it just the climax of the film happens and everyone's excited and with all the fanfare and everything, the film just kind of like fades into black and it's like just ends.
Okay, speaking of Disney, this is how this movie felt like to me. So like The Lion King, right?
Uh-huh.
You go through the whole movie. Simba's up on Pride Rock. It's raining. He roars, and that's the end of the movie. There's no part where they like introduce he has a daughter and stuff. Like that, you know, shows that there's a full circle of life. It's like 99% of a circle. Like, that's how I feel.
Okay.
Where's my 1% of a circle, Bill and Ted? That's what I'm missing.
Okay, and mind you, I can see that okay, does have cool. A very true there's truth to what you're saying. I don't know, like for me, I felt like this particular movie just fit right perfectly into the hole that was made for it, because I think anything more would have been excess, in all honesty. Like the way the film ends, I think the film ends in a way where I think anything else would have required a gag or a joke or something else. And I think at that point we were at like the very tip of the glass of filling it up in terms of our fill of like Bill and Ted and their journey. You know, I don't think anything else would have. Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. And mind you, this is not a spoiler, but it is something that you will have to look into. Did you watch the end credit scene?
Yes.
You didn't feel resolved with the end credit scene?
There's no way I can go into this without spoilers, because I would like to also, like, I want Bill and Ted has never been a movie to stick to rules. Uh-huh. Bill and Ted does what Bill and Ted wants to do. This movie, from just a logic standpoint, like, you know how Back to the Future makes sense as a time travel movie
to some extent, yeah,
for the most part.
Yeah.
This movie makes no sense in any way you look at it. It just doesn't work, like from a time traveling perspective, because you can't not have a thing go to yourself in the future. They don't know what you're talking about. Go further into the future, and they're like, "Oh yeah, that thing that we did, I remember all that. Oh, how come you didn't remember that before you were, when you were older, but not that old?" Like, it's like they had memory lapses or something. Maybe they did.
I think you're putting too much weight on, because you're comparing it to Back to the Future, which, I mean, I don't know if we have to rewatch that one video about the logic of Back to the Future. But there's a sense of logic that goes to Back to the Future that is much more based on somewhat structure. It doesn't. Here's the thing. Back to the Future's time travel element doesn't work off of rules. It just works off of a structure. So it says, okay, this is the barrier here. This is the barrier here. We can't go past these lines. Okay. Because there's several elements of Back to the Future that, If Endgame didn't explain it well enough, I mean, I don't
Endgame
know what else.
Didn't explain it well enough. Professor Hulk was talking in circles. I go back into your previous. Whatever, Hulk. Gosh,
I'm just saying this film doesn't work off of a structure for time travel, because it's more based on the hilarity that ensues when you have two people like Bill and Ted who are given charge of something like a time traveling phone booth to travel across the universe. And I think that's the element that's meant to be the standout thing. It's the time travel itself is almost like another character, because if you look at Back to the Future, time travel is the vehicle. It goes from plot point A to plot point B. Bill and Ted, time travel is the character. The way time travel happens, the way time affects, the way time is manipulated, the way time just does whatever time wants to do. I think that element is meant to be more of a character in the film rather than more so a vehicle within the film. Because, to be honest, I've never seen people be raised from the dead the way, you know, death does it, but I'm not one to learn voodoo and rituals to get people to rise from the grave, so I'm not going to test that theory. But when it comes to the style of, like, their time travel, I don't think it's meant to be so rigid and structured. And even then, you look at things like Back to the Future, there are tons of ways where they've bent their own rules and they didn't follow their own structure. People are just obtuse to it because they like Back to the Future so much that they're willing to overlook that, i.e. everything pretty much in the third Back to the Future film. So there are,
I don't remember that movie.
there are elements in that Back to the Future that has moments where they bend the rules. Just like if you're looking at a very rigid Back to the Future movie, like Primer is one of those ones where, if you've ever seen Primer was a film that was done that was really unique. It was definitely kind of a very structured and very, very rule-based time travel film. It's more based in the science of it than it is in the element of, like, having a good time with it. Like Back to the Future or even Bill and Ted. But you even things like Synchronicity. Synchronicity is another one. Synchronicity was a really great film in the 2010s or later 2010s, where the rules are unique and the focus of the time travel aspect is very different. However, it still has rules. Even when you think that the plot is done, there are still rules that are being followed because of the time travel. So nevertheless, I don't think Bill and Ted is meant to be like compared to a structured and rigid formula for time travel, much like Endgame or Back to the Future. But I do see how there are certain elements of that final act of the film that can, and even parts of it throughout the rest of it, like, that don't quite make as much sense in terms of time travel. But I still think it wasn't meant to be like a sense of logic for the film. It was meant to be just a character for the film. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
What are you thinking over there? Because you look like you're stuck.
I don't think I'm not stuck. Maybe you're stuck. Jeez. I guess it's just, it's odd when you say it's a character, but they do in fact give it rules that are confusing. For instance, the clock's always ticking when you're time traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's one of the things, like, because the future is kept at the same temporal distance as Bill and Ted is, so it's also 30 years in the future, despite the fact that they're time traveling and traveled backwards in time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is there, like, a universal clock in the background that just keeps everyone in march, like, step with each other? Like, that's so bizarre and specific. That's why, like, when you throw in things like that, it just comes across as weird. For it to be like, oh, there's no real rules or structure here, it's just a character, when there is one very clear, very confusing rule.
Uh-huh.
Because when you add in that rule, a lot of other things get really shifty later on in the film that I can't talk about because it's spoilers. But, like, they, like, when you really think about what's going on, some people have time traveled without actually time traveling, which is very bizarre.
Uh-huh.
Do you not know what I'm talking about?
I don't think I do, but okay.
Yeah, I can't get into it. It's going to be a spoiler. We have to talk about this. And this is why it should have been an extra credit of the spoiler.
We can do an extra credit episode on that. It's fine. Right, that's fine. That's right, fine. We'll do it live. It's fine. It's fine. But I think altogether, the film itself, there are a lot of great high points for the. There's a lot of really good high points for the film in terms of recognizing the ability to create a time travel film that, yes, sometimes doesn't always follow its own rules. Back to the Future. But it also. It makes light of it so that you're not focused on the rules. You're focused on the fun that they're having, and you're focused on the actual, which is why like things like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure or Bogus Journey, or, you know, they are focused on the element of the journey itself, the experience of it, and not so much of like, oh, well, you know, when he pushes this button, it's going to go 88 miles an hour, and it's going to do these things and that things, and then it's going to go... Like, they're just moving through time to figure out how to solve the problem. And time travel is just a weird thing that they're trying to learn as they're going. And I want to say, like, this movie does pay off, like, some of the more unique tropes of time travel... In certain aspects, things we'll cover in our extra credit episode, because we're gonna. It sounds like we're just gonna have to do it and have that extra credit episode, because there are elements that I thought was like, oh, okay, they're mentioning this or they're doing that or they're, you know, whatever. But all in all, I really do think this movie, for everything going on right now and all the craziness in the world, having a movie where the sole focus is to unite the world in a sense of peace and harmony. Isn't really a bad idea.
Right? It's not. Like, honestly, this is really something I think a lot of us need this year. It's just something that's positive and not in an obnoxious way, but just is a friendly, positive movie where you can just watch something and it's like, it leaves you with like a nice, hopeful feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we need more positivity in the world.
And by the way, who knew Kid Cudi was so smart? Like,
don't get me started on Kid Cudi. Professor Nonsense up here.
We'll talk about it in the extra credit episode. We'll talk about
I'm going to say this one thing. Not a spoiler. But I have watched so much Star Trek technobabble. It's Kid Cudi in Bill and Ted 3 that I'm like, no, sir. I'm sorry. None of this is a thing. It's not a thing. I'm sorry.
You're really going to argue with me? Okay.
With Kid Cudi, yeah, I can. Because guess what? Science is a thing. I can look up stuff.
Science
I've got access
to
Google.
So you really think everything you said was babble?
Yes. Why would space-time be affected by a holographic matrix? What? What does that even mean? That doesn't mean anything.
Do you know what it means?
It does. I don't see how. No.
See?
I don't see how that's going to affect space-time.
Oh, man. Well, before we close this out, Spencer, is there anything else that you want to touch on before we wrap this thing up?
All right, this is not to be mean or anything, but, like, to you, doesn't, for some weird reason, Keanu Reeves look older without his beard?
100%.
Because, like, huh?
Yeah, because all this time he's had his, like, lines hidden by his facial hair. And so now you're like, whoa, because you can see the lines.
That's
and
so
it's
stupid,
like,
but it's really true.
I'm like,
he looks so old. Why?
Grow it back. Grow it.
Like, honestly, yeah. Like, for some reason, that makes Keanu look younger. He should stick with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was really the only thing I wanted to bring up. What about you? You got anything you want to bring up?
I did like, and mind you, this isn't a. Too much of a spoiler, but I love the scene where we got a chance to see Dave Grohl pop up and is like, this is my house. Like, there's a whole sequence. And mind you, you know, if you've ever been to a concert, you've ever seen Dave Grohl in a interview, whatever. Like, you're just like, this man needs to be in more movies. He's just so funny. Like, he is one of probably the most entertaining when he's not singing, he's probably one of the most entertaining people on stage or in music. Let's just be honest. And seeing him in this and kind of look like he was having fun, like he looked like he was having fun, it was good to see that. And I thought that was a really cool, fun moment. I'm trying to think. What other really notable moments? There's so many.
I think one of my favorite notable moments is when Bill and Ted are speaking to one of their very future versions of themselves.
Uh-huh.
And they just have like a heart-to-heart with themselves. It's like the most nonsense conversation in this movie.
And yet it was one of the more touching moments of the film.
Which was insane, but also like I really did enjoy it. It was hilarious, confusing, and heartfelt.
Which reminds me, one of the funniest scenes that happens earlier on in the first act is when so Jillian Bell, which to be honest, I'm not the biggest fan of Jillian Bell, but if you've ever seen her in any of our films, she always plays, her humor is just very niche. Trying to find where she's at. She's always plays like that weird, has humor but doesn't have humor. Like she wants to be funny, but then she's not really, like she's like that awkward kind of funny person. I'm trying to find where it's at.
What are you trying to find?
So I don't really like her. But I don't like her humor. She was in that Knockout or whatever that movie was, Fist Fight or something. The one with Charlie Day and Ice Cube. Do you remember that movie? It was Fist Fight.
Okay.
She played a teacher who was really just awkward. I think she was like the PE coach or some PE teacher. Either way, long story short, I don't like her humor. And then I saw her in the Hulu film Brittany Runs a Marathon. Have you ever seen that one?
Nope.
So I saw her in Brittany Runs a Marathon, and mind you, she's always been like a bigger actress. Not to be rude or anything, but she was a much larger actress in terms of body size. And then in this movie, like it kind of addresses a lot of her awkwardness in this movie. As like a way to deflect and so forth. Like her awkwardness is a way to kind of maneuver out of awkward situations and so forth. And she really does a great job in this movie. And so ever since that, I've actually been able to kind of stand her a little bit more because she actually does a really good job as a serious actress in that movie, balancing out her humor. So in this movie, I have to admit, I actually liked her role as the couples counselor, the therapist. And I really enjoyed how things just escalated and she just had no clue how to handle the situation with everything like happening in the session. And she just had this like look of like blank stare. Oh my God, what is happening in my office? Kind of moment. And I thought it was hilarious. I really did. Because in small spurts, she's great. In like just pouring it on, like it's like no bueno. So I like the amount of Jillian Bell in this movie. I thought it was good. So, yeah.
Okay. I've never heard of her before, so I have no opinion.
Yeah, she's just been in a couple movies. Like, did you ever see that movie Rough Night? The one where the girls, what's her name?
No. Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson, yeah. And like Kate McKinnon and all them, she's in that. She was in that movie Office Christmas Party. But she always plays usually like the same character. Nothing really changes in terms of that. Like it's always the same character. I don't know. I don't know any other way to explain her. But yeah. So aside from that, yeah. I thought the amount of her was just perfect in this film. So wrapping this thing up. Spencer, I'm going to start with you. Does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles?
Okay, so this movie passes for me.
Okay.
I was very scared going into this. I was slightly worried that this might not you know, land properly, but you know, it does. It works really well as a sequel. I had a great time. It has a pretty positive message, which is, you know, what we all need when the world is on fire outside. I want to give this movie a 4, but like the ending kind of knocks it down for me.
Wow.
So yeah,
you're gonna mark it for the ending. Okay. Yeah. Didn't stick the landing for you.
The last third of this movie, like it's like someone was like, "You guys need to wrap it up here because we are not paying for this anymore." That's what it feels like to me.
Like someone like really rushed them forward to get like what they needed to be done out of out the can and into like print.
Yeah, but like the first two thirds of this movie, like, super great. I really had a great time.
Okay, so how many monocles did you give it?
3.5 out of 5.
Okay. The film passes for me. I think it does a really great job not overselling 80s humor. It balances it really well with modern day real world problems to an extent, not a lot of them, but like to an extent for their situation. I like the balance of the characters in terms of them recognizing their age with their understanding of their responsibilities. I really do appreciate the work Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves put into their characters. Oh, and then it's in the trailer. But William Sadler coming back as Death was a great like throwback to the previous films, and his role is incredible. William Sadler is like no time has passed since the last film. He's great in this movie, and I loved his whole role in this film. The film passes for me, and in terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a 4 because I think, although it didn't stick, the landing didn't stick for you with that third act, I think it does for me in the fact, in the efforts of creating a film that allows you just to have fun and not worry about the logic of it all. And in that sense of thinking, the ending works fine. I didn't say it was good.
Like, I feel like it throws in a lot of weird things without realizing it's throwing in a lot of weird things.
I didn't say it was perfect. I didn't say it was great. I think it's good enough.
I'll agree it is good enough.
It does. It really does do a good job of wrapping up what would have been like the right amount of Bill and Ted 80s humor, the bro mentality, like the bro, dude, whoa. Like, I don't know if I could have taken a lot of that even more, but I think it was just the right amount. And we're forgetting, I'm sorry, we forgot one big piece of the film. Like, the music was on point in this movie.
Oh, dang it. That's right. I wanted to mention, like, it wasn't until this movie that I realized that Bill and Ted movies do not have much music in them, because mostly they couldn't play throughout the first movie, and they learned how to play in the last 5 minutes of the second movie.
Yep.
So, like, there's not really too much of them playing. So it's really cool that, like, there's actual music in this movie from, like, Bill and Ted's side.
I think this movie is actually filled with music, whether if it's good or artistic or really just awesome music. This movie has a lot of it in there, and there's a lot of great instances where you see collaborations between different styles of music, and honestly, I loved a lot of those scenes. And mind you, we can go into detail in that extra credit episode when we do, because we're gonna have to, now that I'm thinking about it. But yeah, I'm gonna have to give this film a 4 out of 5. It's definitely a fun film. It's definitely a fun watch, and it definitely it actually allowed me to have, like, I saw this movie, so I'll be first to complain about it when Spencer does it, but he hasn't said anything, so thank you. But I didn't see this movie until today, but watching it after a busy day of work, like after a really rough day of work, like, honestly, this movie perked my spirits. Like, I had a really good attitude after the fact. And it was great. And I can honestly probably attribute it to how fun this movie was. So this is one of those types of movies that just really, if you're not focused on the logic like Spencer or the science of it like Spencer, like, it's a movie that'll definitely perk your attitude, give you a little bit of a pick-me-up, and it's just a great movie to have fun with. So, yeah, I give it a 4 out of 5.
Nice.
So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out at our website at filmlosophers.com. Or on our Facebook page at Filmlosophers, or facebook.com/Filmlosophers, or on Instagram and Twitter at Filmlosophy101. Don't forget, we got all those last episodes from last month, all celebrating the life of Bruce Lee. So if you haven't had a chance to check those out, do so. And be on the lookout, because we apparently got an extra credit episode coming soon to talk about all the juicy spoilers about this movie. And kind of dig into a couple questions that I may have about Spencer's logic of time travel. I don't know. I think he's just, you know, flexing too much over there.
All right. Yeah, no, that's not the problem.
But this was a great conversation. And mind you, Bill and Ted, these are movies that are really looking just to have fun. And this film definitely follows suit with that film franchise. And so, like I said, if you're looking to have a great time with the film and wanting to have a little moment where, you know, you can have some brevity in the event of everything else happening out in the world, this is definitely one of those types of movies where you can do that. So, yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
So that about wraps up another awesome episode. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.